नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading Canto 4, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachina Barhi. Text 73. Arthehya vidyamanepi. Arthehya vidyamanepi. Sansritirnani vartate. Sansritirnani vartate. Dhyayato vishayanasya. Dhyayato vishayanasya. Svapne nartagamo yatha. Svapne nartagamo yatha. Artehya vidyamanepi. Sansritir nanivartate. Dhyayato vishayanasya. Svapne nartagamo yatha. Okay, arthe, sense objects. He, certainly. Avidyamane, not being present. Api, although. Sansriti, material existence. Na, never. Nivartate, ceases. Dhyayataha, meditating. Vishayan, on sense objects. Asya, of the living being. Svapne, in dream. Anartha, of unwanted things. Agamaha, appearance. Yatha, as. Translation appropriate by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When the living entity dreams, the sense objects are not actually present. However, because one has associated with the sense objects, they become manifest. Similarly, the living entity with undeveloped senses does not cease to exist materially, even though he may not be exactly in contact with the sense objects. Purport. It is sometimes said that because a child is innocent, he is completely pure. Actually, this is not the fact. The effects of fruitive activities reserved in the subtle body appear in three concurrent stages. One is called bija, the root. Another is called kutastha, the desire. And another is called palonmukha, about to fructify. The manifest stage is called prarabdha, already in action. In a conscious or unconscious state, the actions of the subtle or gross bodies may not be manifest, but such states cannot be called the liberated state. A child may be innocent, but this does not mean that he is a liberated soul. Everything is held in reservation, and everything will become manifest in due course of time. Even in the absence of certain manifestations in the subtle body, the objects of sense enjoyment may act. The example has been given of a nocturnal emission in which the physical senses act even when the physical objects are not manifest. The three modes of material nature may not be manifest in the subtle body, but the contamination of the three modes remains conserved, and in due course of time it becomes manifest. Even if the reactions of the subtle and gross bodies are not manifest, one does not become free from the material conditions. Therefore, it is wrong to say that a child is as good as a liberated soul. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Yena Tasme Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Arthehya Vidyamanepi Sanskritirna Nivartate Dhyayato Vishayanasya Svapne Anarthagamo Yatha. When the living entity dreams, the sense objects are not actually present. However, because one has associated with the sense objects, they become manifest. Similarly, the living entity with undeveloped senses does not cease to exist materially, even though he may not be exactly in contact with the sense objects. So here the point is made in these verses is that even though sometimes the subtle body or physical body may not be active, that does not mean a person is liberated. Yeah? Because what makes one a liberated soul is when one's avidya or deep-rooted ignorance is removed. And that cannot be done, that removal is not done when the person is unconscious, or in a few verses back it was, some examples were given, deep sleep, faint, some great shock, yeah, on account of death, or when the body temperature is very high. So at that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body with the self. But that's not liberation. That's rather, you know, ignorance. So it's like, I'm just thinking some example from daily life of that is the computer. You may put it on standby, which is you suspend the active functioning, but the function is there. It's computer is on sleep, in sleep mode. So as soon as you press the button and all the programs that were opened, they just pop up again on your screen. Now you may even suspend computer to a deeper mode of hibernation, you know, where computer even doesn't, you know, consume even power. But still that there's something that keeps it going, even though it's powerless, virtually. And then, you know, press a button and then all the softwares that were open, they come. They pop up back. They start functioning. So in the same way, a living entity may, due to some, conditions, as were described, great shock, death, some loss of memory or deep sleep, we forget its identification, but it exists. Yeah? Or even as in the example that I've given, you put the computer in the deeper suspension as by hibernating it. So in the same way, living entity, during the ultimate annihilation of the universe, those living entities that didn't use that chance to get liberated, they emerged in the body of Mahavishnu, at that time their subtle bodies, they do not function, neither gross nor subtle bodies. But the living entities are there, and they are dormant together with their ignorance that the root of material existence. So then when the universe, when the creation again takes place, living entity awakens and remembers all its past tendencies and acts accordingly. That is supto titanyaya. A person will go to sleep, but once a person wakes up, immediately whatever he knew before sleeping, it is revived in the memory. So the same thing is going on in case of jiva and its material existence. So, then who reminds? This is the super soul. So, Krishna says that from me comes remembrance. How remembrance, particularly in that verse, means how to interact with sense objects and how to use your senses for that. That particular remembrance. Krishna assists the living entity in the material existence too. Otherwise, material existence, material energy is totally alien to the soul. How a pure spirit being can exploit matter? They both are incompatible. But by the existence of Paramatma, that is possible. Yeah? Paramatma is like a decoder of the material energy that kind of presents the material energy somewhat intelligible to the living being, so the living being can function and think itself to be the enjoyer, the doer, and so on. Yeah, I'm moving matter. Yeah, that illusion is there. So, Paramatma, Matasmritir, Jnanam, Apohanam cha, and forgetfulness too. Forgetfulness too. Forgetfulness of things that we did in the past life, so that the conditioned living entity can go on enjoying. But this is Krishna's assistance to the living beings that are still undertaking this attempt to enjoy matter. However, Krishna also assists living entities who try to become liberated. And this is explained in the next two lines of the same verse. Vedeshcha sarvair aham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. So Krishna says, Krishna, specifically for those living entities who want to get liberated, Krishna says, I am the one to be known through the Vedas. And I compile the Vedanta. And Vedanta Krit Vedavid, I'm the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna gives transcendental knowledge as through the Vedas. The Vedas are considered sometimes considered the body of the Lord. Sometimes they're compared to the Lord's breathing. Krishna is Paramatma. From within, Krishna guides the living entity towards Him gradually. And Krishna, in His external manifestation as Guru, also guides the living entity. So, this is what's going on. And in this verse, there is the analogy is given of a living entity dreaming. Even though living entity does not associate with the sense objects, they become manifest in dream. Similarly, a living entity with undeveloped senses does not cease to exist materially, even though he may not be exactly in contact with the sense objects. So this is in connection to the previous verse of how it was described, how children, when their senses and mind and intelligence are not fully developed, then they do not manifest their conditioned nature fully. But you see children when they grow, you see how individually they gradually show their tendencies. Yeah, and the thing is, I think Sean Prabhupada is speaking here against the notion that some people think that child is completely pure because child seems to be so. That's not like that. It's just all the anarthas that living entity is carrying with him, they're there in a dormant state, and just wait for a few months or a few years and you'll see everything. One devotee told me that how he saw how there were a family, they had two children, older son and younger daughter, And he saw how once, you know, naturally parents were at some point of time busy with the youngest, with the daughter. So at some point the parents, they went on the side, and then this time he looked around and just left that young girl, that his younger sister, because he was jealous. So just see, jealousy comes up. And children, they can't hide. One of my friends, he has an older son, and then after 5 years, they had another newborn boy, and naturally mother also was giving attention for a few months to that newborn boy. So then my friend is saying how once his older son, he came up to him and asked for permission. Can I beat my brother? Because he felt so, at times he felt very jealous. So just see, children are not innocent. People like here, you know, I noticed here in India, people like to come and touch the feet of babies. They think, you know, they're pure, they're, you know, almost equal to saints. Sometimes they say it's, child is like Bhagavan, you know. So that's in my understanding, that is sentimental. That's not actually so. That's sentimental. But people are like that. People don't know. They are not educated in philosophy. They think children are, you know, almost like saints. They are innocent to some degree, yeah. You can admit that. But everything is just for the time being. So then, the living entity, Dhyayato Vishayanasya. So we have in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita that verse, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsah. So living entity contemplates the sense objects, you know, and that contemplation, that it leaves an attachment in the heart. Sangasteshu Pajayate. That's the result of contemplation. And that is a sanskara, yeah? Attachment. What is the yoga definition I heard of attachment? How do you define the raga? The memory of pleasure. That's a very nice definition. In the same way, dvesha, hatred, repulsion towards something, is a memory of suffering. So you, in contact with a certain sense object, you felt pleasure. So that stays in the form of a subtle memory of impression, that you remember that pleasure. So when next time you see a similar sense object, that memory, subconscious memory of that record of pleasure you had, will pull your mind towards that sense object, and vice versa with dvesha, with hatred and repulsion, aversion, same thing. So we have totally programmed by our material mind with these memories, which are described as sanskaras or vasanas, totally programmed, like a puppet moved by the threads, you know. So the mind is moving the conditioned soul, unless the intelligence is trained by the scripture, by guru, in association of saintly devotees. Then the living entity, unless living entity is in that situation, the living entity will be just dragged, totally programmed. Basically, that's what Krishna means, you know, kartaham iti manyate, but then, what's that, the first line, prakrite kriyamanani gunaik karmani sarvashaha. There's living entity is in this way, is not in his own is in his own control. Yeah, he's being pulled around on all sides. So this is the situation, and then that sangha, that attachment that brings out lust, sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodho bijayate, and that kama produces anger of two types, because in this material world it's very difficult to uninterruptedly enjoy anything. So person becomes angry at any kind of interruption of his sense enjoyment. Yeah? Or krodha, that anger in a different way, in the way of frustration. Person becomes so, he enjoys a certain sense object to such a degree that he just becomes fully satiated with it. But then, and then he thinks, what's going on? I wanted this so much, but now it's not bringing me any more pleasure. So what is this life about? You know, and the person becomes angry and frustrated. So frustration is a subtle form of anger. So then, krodhat bhavati sammoha, illusion, bewilderment. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti vibhrama. Yeah, losing one's smriti, losing one's memory. Smriti bhramshat buddhinasho. When memory is lost, then intelligence is lost. Buddhinashat pranashyati. And when there is no intelligence, there is just destruction. Yeah, nasha. Total loss. So this is the psychology, succinct, in brief, psychology of the material world. All psychology is described in these two verses. And all psychological problems you can find in between these lines. Everything. Just have to unpack it more and more on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, and then you can cure Jaya Shishi Gornita Shri Krishna Balaram Shishi Radhe Shyam. And you can cure any psychological problem with that, with the help of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Because we understand correctly what's the position of things. So, in this life, we constantly go on contemplating the sense objects. But interesting that the first sentence of the purport to that verse, Dhyayato Vishayan, in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada starts immediately by saying that this is the situation of a person who has no Krishna consciousness. Immediately. From the beginning, we have to make difference, because the devotee is also, he is engaged with nothing but sense objects also. If you see externally, touch, smell, taste, form and sound. You know, but the devotee's focus is totally different. Why? Because the devotee, what differentiates between the two? Because the devotee doesn't have that ignorance, that which impels living entity to think and meditate and plan how to use these sense objects in my enjoyment. But the devotee's goal is different. The devotee is thinking, how can I use this for Krishna's pleasure? And therefore, even while contemplating various sense objects, the devotee is not, devotee's intelligence is not polluted by attachment, by lust, by anger, and so on. Because a devotee sees everything, a sole proprietor of everything is Krishna, and everything, therefore, is to be employed in Krishna's service. That's the mentality. And therefore, there is no bondage for a devotee because of that consciousness. Therefore, prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshu vih parityago, was that vairagyam phalgu kathyate. So that is phalgu vairagya, when things that are actually connected to Hari, a person renounces them because of prapanchikataya buddhya. What is that? Because of materialistic intelligence, he renounces it. And that renunciation is actually madness. It is likened to imagine you go to the bank and you see the clerk, and the clerk will announce that, I renounce all this money in this branch. You know, that will be really stupid. Everybody will laugh at him. But in this world, such renouncers of such type, they are being praised as great gurus. You know, they give them label Jagat Guru, and you know, people worship them, even though in essence they do you know, nothing more intelligent than the bank clerk saying that, I renounce all this money. in the branch. So quite silly if you think about it. But we can think about it just because we have that mercy, we have received this transcendental knowledge, we can see the reality of things. We can cut through and see the the actual what's inside this world, and what's inside all those concepts that people preach in this world. And then opposite, on the other hand, there is a Yukta Vairagya, which is Anasakta Sivishayan Yatharham Upayunjataha Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. So that is Yukta Vairagya, proper renunciation, when one is not personally attached to things around. There's no personal attachment, but person as is suitable, person, a devotee, engages things in the service of the Lord. This is proper renunciation, yeah? And this is the constitutional position and consciousness of the living entity. So therefore a devotee is not entangled. And how can you see that? You can theoretically, on the strength of your intelligence, always remember these points. But ultimately, what is the ultimate secret and key to such a vision is loving attachment to your worshipable deity. Then only you will spontaneously see all things around you as his and meant for his service. Yeah. But before that, before this spontaneous attachment and love has come into our hearts, we have to at least theoretically train ourselves in such a vision. But ultimately, we should understand that the ultimate solution to this is developing pure love of Krishna. Then only this vision will become effortless. It will become natural to us, you know. So then, another point in this verse, as Srila Prabhupada explains, is how about children. Yeah, children, child is innocent. Sometimes it is said that child is innocent because he seems like pure, but it is wrong. So then, yesterday I read one, I remember that on this particular point there was an interesting article by Ravindra Swarupa Prabhu, which is published as a compilation of his articles, Endless Love. If you ever read this book, it's a very nice book to read, Endless Love, published by the BBT. So one article is entitled, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People? This is a perennial question. It's coming up again and again in the world of theology. Indeed, there is, as Ravindra Swarupa Prabhu explains, there is even a whole big branch of theology called theodicy that attempts to explain the presence of evil in the world against the fact that God is all good and God is all powerful. This is their puzzle for centuries. Just because they are so stubborn and they don't accept Vedic scriptures, they try to find answers within their limited scriptures. Very, very limited scriptures. And they can't. And therefore they have to mix it with some mundane philosophies, and they present it as Christian theology or any other type of theology. So then it was described in the article of how actually Ravindra Swarupa Prabhu, they were fixing a marble altar in the temple, and that contractor, he came, and one day he just openly told to Ravindra Swarupa. He had actually his son, and his son was handicapped from birth. So this contractor was every day bringing with him on his job his son, and his son would be there all day with him, because otherwise what such a child can do, you know. So and then he frankly just told to Ravindra Swarupa that when I understood that my child is incurable, I stopped going to church. I became an atheist. And then Ravindra Swarupa Prabhu, he describes how there was a book written by a Jewish rabbi, also entitled, had a similar title, Why When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And that rabbi had also a son who had a very rare disease, when basically an accelerated aging, so that he could witness his son growing old and dying, just like an old man with wrinkles and, you know, gray hair and bent over, in 14 years old. That brought this rabbi and his faith into a point of crisis, where he had to reconcile his convictions, his faith, and the reality of life. And this is happening to many people. Yeah. So how to put it together? God is all good and God is all powerful. At the same time, I see that such a misery in my life and such a misery in the life of my child. Yeah. So how to put it together? Can I still go on believing in God as all good and all powerful, and seeing what's happening to my son and what pain it gives to me? So these questions he posed, and he tried as a so-called theologian, he tried to reconcile them within the framework of his Abrahamic framework. That Abrahamic means the religions that stem from that from the Middle East, like Christianity, Islam, and so on, with a certain axioms. So he tried within that limited framework find answers to this, and so he proposed the solution, theological solution to the problem, to this philosophical problem. So he said that he said that it makes people feel, it depresses people even more if they continue thinking that God is all powerful and all good, and he's just punishing them for their previous sins. That's what he said. But so therefore he proposed the solution that no, we shouldn't become atheists. That's not good. We will not gain anything from that, by denying God or by blaspheming him. But we should go on believing God and loving God, but we should understand that he is also limited. He also has some limitation. Therefore his conclusion was you have to forgive God sometimes too. Just as he said, just as a child grows, and the parents might be ideal, but still sometimes parents do mistakes. But when the child grows older, he understands, he looks back in life and he remembers, oh, parents did some mistake in my life. So he said that in the same way, we should forgive God for for doing some things that, he didn't have enough power to fix some things in our life, and he also feels bad over there. He sits up there and he also feels pain along with us. He sympathizes us. So this was he proposed this solution. But all his that is, totally unacceptable, of course, to us. But he gained lots of following as a result of of that book. That book gained lots of following among people because it appealed to them. They wanted to remain you know, God believers, but at the same time they wanted to come out of that dilemma, you know, of all good and all powerful God and the evil in the world, and not just in the world but in my life, and see what's happening to my kid, you know. But then the point is that this whole solution, defective solution, it brings nothing. It doesn't even actually solve the problem. It even, you know, implicates you even more. And therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that incomplete theism is worse than materialism. Because, you know, people see, because otherwise God is seen as, you know, God consciousness, usually people expect, you know, solution from it. But then if God is not properly explained, then this brings even more harm than gross materialism. Yeah? Because it plants the seed of even deeper atheism in people. Yeah? It's very subtle. So therefore God consciousness has to be presented completely and perfectly. Otherwise, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, even more harm will be done. So this is exactly what's happening. With time, these many religions in the world, they become, they degraded their own teachings, and they actually preach nothing but a materialism, but together with God in the picture. And this is what leads them to such erroneous solutions as that Rabbi proposed, you know. And so therefore, the first thing to understand is why he posed the question, why bad things happen to good people. So the first answer is that there are no good people as such. We understand that a living entity is carrying with himself or herself all these, you know, the burden of these reactions that a living entity has to reap in this life, you know. So therefore, and who has loaded on the living entity all that bag? Not God, definitely, because God is not interested in, you know, creating, giving us troubles. It is a self-inflicted suffering, self-inflicted misery, which is a result of a wrong choice. This is what the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is about. And second thing, so first of all, there are no good people, even though as children they may seem to be, oh, a child is just innocent. Just like you see in the street, sometimes you may see some guy is running and the people are running after him with sticks, and then they catch him and they start beating him like anything. So you may get agitated. What are you doing? Why are you beating him? What, just because you don't know what he did. It was out of your purview. You didn't see. Maybe he has stolen something, or maybe he has done some nonsense, so therefore he deserved this beating. But because it was outside of your purview, you didn't see that. You saw just him running and him being beaten up. You think, what an injustice. So same thing is happening. People see, you know, just in, for instance, you know, children, sometimes they suffer. Like the son of that rabbi. Yeah. So, but then you don't see. It was outside of your purview. You're not the sakshi. But the Paramatma is the sakshi. Yeah. And law of karma is an infallible justice that we have to understand. So this is one thing. There are no good people. Second thing, how to answer this so-called question is that this world is not meant for our pleasure, and God is not the order supplier. See, all these doubts, they come from people who think that the only business of God is to arrange for our comforts in this world. And this is the only purpose that God created this world, so that we can enjoy. So this initial Kaitava Dharma is there as the root of these misconceptions. It's cheating religion from the beginning. But the Bhagavatam is what? Projita, Dharma Projita Kaitava. It just kicks out all cheating religion. Materially motivated religion. Yeah. So God's business is not to arrange for our comforts, and the purpose of this world is not to serve as a proposed comfortable dwelling for us, you know. It has a different purpose. It has a reformatory purpose. And from the very beginning in pure scriptures such as Gita and the Bhagavatam, the fact is presented just at face. Dukalyam Ashashvatam. So Krishna doesn't say, you know, you worship me and you'll get everything. He does say that, but he's not focusing on this. He says this is for fools, you know. This is for fools whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires. So from the very beginning, Bhagavad Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, kicks out all such cheating. But people who don't have that reference in their life due to their misfortune, they have in their stock only that materially motivated religion, and then they are trying to find answers on such existential questions, why bad things happen to so-called good people, in parentheses, you know. And the question itself is defective, and the solution is even more defective. Yeah, go on believing God, but just forgive him. He's also suffering just like you. So this Kaitava Dharma has to be kicked out, you know. And as once Gopi Pradhanana Prabhu said, nice, very nice phrase. Christianity had its chance for 2,000 years. Now let the Bhagavatam step in. You know. And it's true, it's true. Once a person comes in touch with this pure philosophy, pure presentation of Sanatana Dharma, there's no blank spaces in the mind. And if something bad happens to you or to a person who is close to you, you know, the thought is not coming in your mind to blame God for something, or, you know, you don't ask these questions, why bad things happen to good people or to me. After all, I'm not that bad, you know. So a devotee who has understood the philosophy, he won't, these questions will not disturb his mind. But what's the attitude of the devotee? Is it very nicely expressed by Lord Brahma? What's that? How does it start? Tatenu kampam, what's the beginning of that? Susamikshamano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvad bhupur bhir vidadhan namaste jiveta yamukti pade sadaya bhak. So this is the point. Accept humbly everything, whatever, you know, miseries come in one's life, and expect God's mercy. But God's mercy not in the sense that, oh, you will be merciful and then all these miseries will go and I'll become again, you know, healthy and comfortable. No. God's mercy in the form of Krishna, please destroy my ignorance. You know. Whatever. Yad bhavim yad bhavatu bhagavan purva karman rupam. This is in Mukundamala. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. But just let me remain as your servant. Let me never forget that I'm your servant. This is pure dharma. Yeah. So, in relation to this, there is a very startling thing written by. Actually, it's not written. It's a thing occurred with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. One incident. person, a very educated person, actually judge, district judge, came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they had a conversation which was later transcribed, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's speech was transcribed and later presented as an article in the Gaudiya Patrika. So the title is Genuine and False Gaura Bhajana, which is exactly about true religion and cheating religion. But it's just, when you hear it, I'll read out some excerpts from it. When you hear it, you feel these words are not ordinary words. It's just piercing through the flesh of our misconceptions and just cuts it through and shows the real picture. The truth as it is. When you read it, it's just, you think it's same like it's the Bhagavatam. You know, even though it's in English, it's just so, brings such a joy to the soul to read such an exposition of our philosophy. So the point was, just the background, person, that judge, his friend had a daughter, and the person was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, at least apparently, and when his daughter became quite sick, and that person, the judge's friend, he increased his bhajan many times. He increased his chanting. He was serving the sadhus constantly. It seems like, you know, he was just going non-stop, doing his bhajan, chanting the name of Gaura constantly. What happened is that ultimately his daughter did die in a very, very severe condition. And the person, soon after that, his bhajan came to nil. And he openly stated, it's much better to just do your own job than to worship Gaura. There is no such person as Gaura. That's what he said. So then the judge, he came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur with, he wanted some clarification. Well, he asked, what do you say about this? So now let's read. It's amazing, some parts of that amazing answer of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he says, the Mahaprabhu whom I have taken shelter of is not the Mahaprabhu of our Babu. That was the name of that person. It's amazing. The first sentence, the Mahaprabhu that I have taken shelter of is not the Mahaprabhu of that guy. He takes Mahaprabhu like a hired gardener. I take shelter of Mahaprabhu of Srivas Pandit. Mahaprabhu spoke of Srivas, who was absorbed in prema, as follows. Putra shoka na janila jemora preme, hena shabashanga mui charei bukemone. How can I ever leave the association of such a person who, due to his love for me, is unaffected even by the demise of his son? So you know that story, how during the kirtan, Srivas Thakur's son died. But Srivas told to the ladies who were wailing there, just stop, you know. Otherwise I'll just commit suicide because your crying disturbs Mahaprabhu's kirtan. And then later on, after a few hours, Mahaprabhu found out. He said, something's wrong in this house. What happened? Srivas Thakur said, actually, you know, my son departed, but it's okay. So, oh. So then Gauranga, he went there and... So he was amazed at Srivas Thakur's devotion, that he didn't want to disturb kirtan. So he told, from now on, me and Nityananda, we are your children. You know, I surrender myself to you as your son. So Mahaprabhu spoke like this to Srivas. Anyway, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur continued, I worship the Mahaprabhu of that Srivas Pandit who told the ladies of his house to stop their crying. If by this halabaloo the Lord's ecstasy is disturbed, then today I shall certainly enter the Ganga and thus commit suicide. Then he said, I worship the Mahaprabhu of Sri Rupa, who described him as follows. Now the quotation from Rupa Goswami. O friend of the poor, do what you like with me. Give me either mercy or punishment. But in this world I have no one to look to except your lordship. The Chataka bird always prays for the cloud, regardless of whether it showers rains or throws a thunderbolt. So it's a very nice comparison. I worship the Mahaprabhu who played the role of Jagadguru to teach us. Ashlisheva padaratam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotuva yathatathava vidathatu lampato mat prananathas tuzayevanaparaha. Then Mahaprabhu continued, I do not mind my personal distress. I wish only for the happiness of Krishna, for his happiness is the meaning of my life. If he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. These are the words of Radharani. Then a little further. Mahaprabhu may release all the misfortunes of the universe upon me millions of times, so that I will worship him. I am ready for that with all my senses. Accepting those calamities, I surrender to his feet, thinking he is protecting me, drawing me toward his lotus feet. He is most merciful to remove my duplicity. He is not allowing me to enjoy my senses. He is making me understand that other than his lotus feet, there is no eternal object of which to take refuge in this world. I am bearing the heavy weight of karmic reactions due to my past actions. If I endure these with a little sufferance and take refuge in my eternal Lord, I will find actual benefit. If I belong to the enjoying category, then when my enjoyment is interrupted, I become angry. On the other hand, the renunciant will say that it is proper to give up enjoyment. The devotees of Sri Gauranga do not tell anybody either to indulge in or renounce enjoyment. They say, let the jiva imbibe his natural tendency for real spiritual objects. If one accepts all three types of misery which come upon him in full force, it is of no benefit. And if one wants to artificially renounce attachment, he cannot. But one who performs dandavat to the Lord's feet with body, mind and words is the rightful heir to liberation. Whatever drawback may come, he will accept it as the Lord's manifesting in the form of mercy. It defies description how much Sri Chaitanya has arranged for our welfare. We are on the path of material enjoyment. To open our eyes, he orchestrates that certain obstacles appear stage by stage among the objects of attachment. He gave me bad health and step by step gave me accidents. He gave a specific transitory nature to all things to help put us on the spiritual path. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, I remember an incident long ago. A high court lawyer named Datta, whose son was on his deathbed, requested me, you are a devotee, please keep my son alive. I told him, I'm not a life restorer. I will try to change the way you think. That's amazing. And then just a few more lines. Our Babu, that the father of the girl who died, our Babu deceptively took shelter of Mahaprabhu as if to enrich Mahaprabhu. This amazing angle. As if Mahaprabhu would be delivered by his mercy. He had perfect attachment to matter, not to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu revealed his duplicitous nature. Our Babu did not investigate this matter in the beginning. Not even for a moment did he see the real form of Mahaprabhu. He thought of the lotus feet of Sri Gauranga as some sort of special medicine or natural product. He thought of Mahaprabhu as a material substance for curing his daughter's illness. The lotus feet of Gaur Nitai remove all anarthas and bestow Krishna Prema. They can bestow love of Radha and Krishna. Their names are non-different from themselves. Gaur Nitai are not some magicians or talismans for removing disease. If he had obtained instructions from the lotus mouth of a guru who was a genuine Gaura Bhakta, the name alone would have bestowed mercy on him and elevated his heart. Because that Arbubu Babu, he said, you know what he said? He said that there is no such Mahaprabhu. If truly there were Bhagavan, he would not cause suffering to his devotee. If he were truly present in everyone's heart, then knowing the pain that would afflict the heart of his devotee, surely he would have saved my daughter. His greatness as God would have become more widespread in this world. Devotees' faith and devotion to him would have grown a million times. They would have preached his greatness to others and brought them to worship him. All members of the family would have increased their faith in Mahaprabhu. And once revived, my daughter would have become so much more attached to him. People in ignorance have faith in the Lord and chant the name of Mahaprabhu. Like that. So he thought, that's why Bhaktisiddhanta said that he thought that he would be the one to give mercy to Mahaprabhu. That Mahaprabhu, you serve me, you cure my daughter, and then your glory, because of me, because you will improve my life, your glory will become, enhanced, and so many more people will become attached to you. Actually, they will not be attached to him. They'll be attached to their own, sense gratification. Like that. The highest benefit tastes bitter, whereas temporary benefit tastes sweet. If a patient tells the doctor to give him sugar cakes instead of bitter medicine, then his accepting the daughter is merely a show. Similarly, there is no use to take refuge of the Lord while trying to increase one's disease. If we ignore the teachings of Sri Chaitanya, we transmogrify him or his devotee into Satan. Like that. So anyway, the article continues and on and on and on. And it's amazing. Amazing words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which expose, this cheating religion, of seeing God as our order supplier. Yeah? And that this cheating religion, it actually, in this way, it sows the seeds of, as I mentioned, of future atheism, which is even a more dangerous atheism. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop here. If you have any questions or comments, some short things.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a very wonderful class, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, I was just thinking about the point Srila Prabhupada is making in the purport, that the child, he is not a pure soul, he is not a liberated soul. Of course, it is completely fact. I was thinking another angle, that is it not the reason why the children are so easily adapt to Krishna consciousness? Because Komara Acharyat Pragya Prahlad says, it is important for the children to be trained in Krishna consciousness because that will stay for their whole life with them. Mm-hmm. But the grown-up people, when they are introduced to Krishna consciousness, they don't accept it very easily. Yeah. And they have many conditionings in their hearts like that.
Yeah, so from that point of view, yes. However, that does not nullify the fact that a child doesn't have with him all this baggage of ignorance. The fact that children can, easily take up whatever their parents do, especially if it's Krishna consciousness. So there is that innocence in that way, because and therefore Kaumara Machar Pragya, therefore ideally from childhood we should introduce a person to Krishna consciousness, because there is no yet that materialistic resistance, and maybe false ego hasn't been fortified so much by materialistic thinking, so that the children are they're in that way, they're open-minded. So you take the chance and catch the person while he is in childhood. Make him a devotee, so therefore, even a person has lots of tendency towards materialism, which will come inevitably later on. The person will have, sufficient wisdom, spiritual wisdom, Krishna conscious wisdom to respond properly to the urges that will come in teenage and later on. So that in that way, child is pure in a sense, The child will not start arguing with you, because children are simple in that way, And at the back, Mataji there.
Thank you very much for the nice class, Prabhu. I have two questions, actually. There's some devotees that go to the cinema and they watch their so-called favorite soap opera on the TV. So I was wondering if you could explain the effects of doing that. also the effect of the difference between reading Srila Prabhupada's books and other people's books.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I wanted to mention that
other people's books means materialistic literature.
Anybody but Prabhupada. Also, I wanted to mention that Srila Prabhupada predicted that the third generation, they will save the world. He didn't have much hope for us or the second generation, but he said that the third generation would be very special. And I met an astrologer. I gave him a chart of a third generation. And he said that, "I've never seen a chart like this in my life." This boy's chart is like Lord Ramachandra. He said, "This boy will save the world." And he said so many charts he's seen of the third generation. He said, these children are being sent by Krishna to this planet.
Yeah, well, I guess that does not at the same time undervalue the contribution that the first and second generations made in order to make possible for third generation to come. That's, you know, it's all is counted, every, you know. So yeah, devotees do, I know personally, devotees do indulge in mundane activities, as you mentioned, watching, directly witnessed that, watching cinemas and mundane soap operas on TV at the same time, sometimes even with the japa pack. It's just inconceivable.
What is the effect on the spirit soul and the subtle body?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's an offense to the holy name to remain materially attached while chanting, which means to consciously feed these material attachments and anartas and to indulge in those weaknesses, having the alternative of, you know, engaging your mind and senses in a Krishna conscious way. So what would be the impact? Impact is that, you know, on one side you're trying to ignite the fire, but then you're pouring water from the other side. And what's the effect? Mahaprabhu says, you will go on chanting birth after birth for many lifetimes in such a way without achieving any, the actual goal of chanting. This is because many people, externally they come to Krishna consciousness, but internally they don't actually understand the essence of the point, the goal of this process. They still think it's some kind of a materialistic religion, and their inner piety kind of drives them towards something godly, you know. But they remain on the level of that piety. Okay, chanting God's name, even taking initiation, you know, but internally they don't understand, and it would be useful for them to read this false and genuine Gaura Bhajana, that article, you know. So many people, they do that. Of course, there is benefit because, you know, some or other they chant, some or other they do some service, some or other they engage their senses, but at the same time, if we speak about the actual benefit, the expected benefit, which is developing pure love of Krishna, yeah, which involves cutting all the attachments to matter in the natural ways, and then that benefit will not be there, and the person will remain a kind of a materialistic devotee, bhakta praya, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, bhakta praya. So that's not the program, to remain Kanishtha Adhikari like this, to just be external, thinking about only the formalities, but without actually understanding the actual goal of the process and going deeper into it and trying to consciously extricate yourself from things that are impediments to our Krishna Bhakti. That's a Madhyama platform, yeah. When you're aware of so many things and you're consciously making an endeavor to serve Krishna. So it's the more preaching should go on of this, even though it's a kind of a basic thing, But it doesn't seem like everybody gets it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I just read another occasion, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was once, he was shedding tears, and in tears he was saying to two of his disciples that there is that drigdrishya vichar, the consideration of who is the seer and who is the seen, that the God is the seer. We are not to see God. God is to see us. We can't see God in the sense that we shouldn't look at the Lord as the object of our measure. We cannot measure Him. We cannot use Him, exploit Him in our sense gratification. So in that way, we are not the seers. Krishna is the seer. We are to be seen by Krishna. So anyway, so Bhaktisiddhanta was crying and he was saying that this drigdrishya vichar, this point, it was throughout my teachings. It was close to the end of his life, he was saying. All my life I was preaching this, but I find hardly anyone who have understood it. And he was sincerely crying, with tears. So we can understand that even though some things may seem to us, it's a basic thing, sambandha gyan, but then have we actually understood it? Are we acting up to this standard of understanding, what is behind our decisions, which considerations, are we guided by in our decisions that we do, how to, at every step of your life, So, yeah. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for a nice lecture. And I was just, I want to just tell that Krishna consciousness was so attractive for me because, as Srila Prabhupada told, nobody rejected in Krishna consciousness. In other religion, in Christianity, in Islam, Buddhism, if you want to do yoga in Himalayas or somewhere else, you need so many conditions. And maybe we are not qualified, especially in Kali Yuga, we are not qualified to do some austerities or to follow very rigidly to some very high sublime conditions of some religion. For example, in Islam there is a Sufism. The very highly elevated persons can perform those austerities, what Sufis do. And about Krishna consciousness, it is so sublime and joyfully performed. Why? Because nobody rejected. You cannot tell you're good, bad. You're not qualified to be in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada told. Nobody can be rejected. Everybody invited. You can invite anybody, even prostitute, thief, very sinful person, even killer of Brahmana can be purified in Krishna consciousness. This is power of Krishna consciousness. This is potency of Krishna consciousness. That's why I am in Krishna consciousness last 30 years. Because this is attracts me. And when I'm going to preaching to Central Asia, I'm going after 1 week to preaching tour in Central Asia, especially in Uzbekistan. I can see in Uzbekistan, this is so fanatic Islamic country. It is so difficult follow to these rules and regulations. Myself, I am from Islamic family. I'm seeing my relatives. And I brought two boys, my nephews, to ISKCON. And I'm very, very thankful to you, Nityananda Prabhu.
Yeah, I'm just given a sign, we have to stop. Jai. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.